We're out here on the picket line in front of Caterpillar, their manufacturing plant.
It's a hydraulics plant.
And could you say your name?
Mike Kara.
How long have you been working with Caterpillar?
17 and a half years.
Can you tell us why you're on strike now?
Because Caterpillar is a greedy company. Basic human rights, really, seniority, some of the language in the contract to where they'd be taking advantage of the workforce and the younger workforce. A lot of things, they don't want to discuss anything, put anything in the contract for the retirement, for the retirees. They want to do that after we sign a contract. And that's just not right. It's not fair to us. It's not fair to the retirees. It's not fair to the next generation.
Can you explain how seniority works?
Well, you come in, you put your time in on second or third shift, away from your family and stuff. You got your mandatory overtime, so you're away from your family and stuff. But 17 and a half years I've been here, 16 of those years I spent on third shift. And
that means you work from what, like
11 at night till 7 in the morning. And, you know, by my seniority, I finally got on day shift and, you know, a job that I like. And they want to take that away, being that we can't bid on jobs. They want to be able to bring people, move them wherever they want to move them. They want to, if they want to start a alternative work schedule, they want to just come up and tell you with no notice that, okay, you're going to work, say, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 12s. You know, they want to hire part-time workers, which would eliminate the overtime that a lot of these people count on, because as much as they want to say how much we make, what they reported in the paper was wrong. We don't make what they make. Our supplementals don't make what they say they make. And we need to get the younger generations better and a secure job to where it can pass on to generations, or this country can't go anywhere. So it was time for us to take a stand, you know, and I truly believe they didn't think that we had it in us to do it with the way the economy and everything is, but we prepared for it and we're ready to fight.
This plant operates under a two-tier contract?
Yes.
Could you explain that to listeners?
You have the what I'll call old-timers. We're at a union scale. Every job has a different scale, but then the ones that are hiring in now would be after 2005, which allowed the two-tier system. They hire in just almost half of what we make, and that, and the company tells them, you know, you come in every 6 months, you get a 50-cent raise and this and that, which was not true when it came in. That's why the younger people stuck with us to call this strike and be out here as long as we are, because they're not being treated the way they should.
So you're placing your financial security and your job security at risk, not strictly for yourself, but also for the incoming generations and current workers who make half your wages to the same job.
And they have less security than we do. They have to go through a two-year probationary period, and at the end of the 2 years, the company can say, okay, we no longer need you. You're going to hire another one, so they don't have to give them the benefits that we get and the security. And then they would get, because once they would go full-time, then they bump up to about $5 an hour less, and then they're stuck. But they still have no use. They can't file grievances. The company doesn't have to have a reason to fire them. You know, there's no security there. And good thing that they're strong enough to stick with us and stay out here and see it, what we've been going through for years and years.
So the union struggles that have taken place over the last 50 years with Caterpillar that have culminated in your having some control over your rights, some control over the conditions in which you work under, that's what's under attack?
I would say yeah.
And why do you think at this time Caterpillar is pushing this issue with you?
I think it's all greed. You know, they make record profits ever since I've been here. I hired in January of 95, every year record profits, year after year after year. Even during the recession, you know, we had the layoffs, and they still made a profit. Okay, that 2 weeks before our vote, our first vote, they gave all management from the bottom of management to the top increases in pay. The lowest in management got 8 to 10%, and then up to the CEO that got 64% increase in pay. They all got bonuses. Even the lowest in management got 3-4 times the amount that we got. You know, we didn't get that much. They get everything, but then they're trying to tell us that we need to take these concessions to stay for Caterpillar to stay competitive. When they started negotiations, how our labor relations person put it was that Caterpillar has 150,000 employees worldwide and 780 people can't hurt them. And that's why we're here to prove them wrong.
Do you think this is part of a larger global agenda that businesses, corporations are pushing ahead with to undermine the standard of living for the working class? It's part of a class war?
Yes, I think they want two classes of people, the rich and the poor. And they're going to push everybody into the poor. And it's a sad thing. You know, they take the stuff to China. Well, now they're finding out China's waking up, wanting more and more money. Okay, yeah, it's still $3 and something an hour they're paying down there. Right around the corner is $6. I heard this on an interview on Nightline. And the CEO from a company was bringing his company back to the States. Even though the hourly wage is more, the American worker outproduces them by almost four times. So I think they're finally, they're pushing strong to push everybody down and that, but it's not going to work. And it's clear to see when they bring in some of these, the younger ones that don't make it, that you just can't take somebody off the street and do the work that we do in there. Hydraulics is a very touchy business. It's a very critical business. It takes a lot of knowledge, a lot of skill. And they're finding that out now.
Now, I heard you mention a little earlier that you had been asked to train some management to be able to do the job that you do. Could you talk about that a little?
They had us at what they call them as contingency workers. They had us train them. It's other management from all the other Caterpillar plants to come in case we went out on strike to be able to do our jobs. They brought them in for a week. You know, and particularly the one that I trained, he was treated terrible by the company, labor relations, and he said from day one he would not come back to this plant. And I recently spoke to somebody on the inside, and he did not come back. So, I mean, even their own people are sick and tired of what they're trying to do.
You worked on your machine for 16 years, you said?
On the machine I'm on now, yeah, 16 years.
And what is it you do on that machine?
It's a centerless grinder. We grind the valve stems for all the valves.
And what is it that one develops over the course of 16 years that 6 months or 6 years wouldn't allow you to develop, to have the skill as an operator?
On my job, it's very precise. The quality has to be there. And in a grinding process is one of the hardest processes to keep.
Isn't it computer controlled?
Yeah, but you got your wear, you got everything else that goes on there.
So there's a human.
You still have to make the adjustments to make the machine do what you need it to do.
Okay, so there's still, even though it's computer controlled, a human element that is now within your skill set, the knowledge base over the course of 16 years, so that you can make the compensations. Correct me if I'm stating something incorrectly. Compensations for the fact that even a computer-controlled machine doesn't run consistently.
Right.
And you have to adjust for the wear that takes place, which a computer is incapable of recognizing.
Because of the tolerances.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, our tolerances, a lot of my stuff has to be within 50 millionths of an inch.
50 millionths of an inch.
Right. And just the touch of your hand can change the size of that part and throw me out of print, you know. So everything is comes into it. And what you do today to fix something on that machine, tomorrow that same problem can come up, and that it's you got to do something else to it. Grinding process is very, very difficult. I enjoy it, but...
And how much can one learn in a week of training so that they could step into fill your shoes at that machine?
They can't learn it in a week. You can't teach everything in a week.
But the company would have us on the outside see you guys as, you know, just people who push buttons and move parts around and, you know, and replaceable like a machine part, and therefore not skilled, you know, factory worker, that sort of broad derogatory label, which is the way they use it now.
Right.
And what I understand you to be telling me is that these are machines that are incapable of performing at their optimum without the skill and the intelligence of a human operator that is highly trained through experience and their own abilities over the course of time on that machine.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, one of the bottom tier guys that hired in, that I trained last, he was with us. He trained with me for 3 weeks, and then he went with another operator on the same type of machine, but just different parts, for a week, and spent a week on each machine in our area to learn the parts and that. And after 2 months, he still was a little skeptical of going on his own and that, and takes his time. But he had experience before running machines and came in with at least machine adaptability. So he was able to do it within, I would say he got good and up to speed for a lower tier within like 3-4 months. You know, he still got a lot to learn, and he'd come in early every day just to ask me questions and stuff that happened the night before, because it's not predictable. Nothing in there is predictable.
Do you turn out the same part every shift?
No. No. My machine, the cycle time is only about 40 seconds. So I got parts going in and out every 40 seconds. Got to check them, make my adjustments for the difference, because every one is unique to each valve body. And that's where they're struggling in there right now. That area I'm in is where they are struggling probably the worst right now. I had just talked to one of the management guys yesterday, and he said that area is kind of a disaster right now.
So their production is down.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell listeners what these car horns are about that they may hear in the background?
This is just people from the community, from the public, that's showing their support for the union. They understand it. Probably a lot of them over the years probably might have worked out here for a short time and know how greedy they are. And they're out here to show their support. I mean, we have people every day coming, dropping off cases of water. And we had one guy just the other day came, showed up with a case of pop, bag of ice, and 3 bags of tacos from Taco Bell. You know, everybody's in to support us, and that's good to see.
Now, I understand that this morning the last offer from the company was voted on. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, we voted on it again today, what their last proposal was.
Was it accepted or voted down?
We voted it down by like 84%. We would like to see the numbers a little higher, because the offer was worse than what we initially voted the strike for. So, you know, the company's looking at it. We've been out for a month. You know, a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. You know, and let's throw it out there and see where they're at. Well, they found out. We voted it down, and we're willing to stay out here, whether it's all summer, winter, it doesn't matter. We're going to be here.
Mm-hmm. And how many members of your local have gone back to work after originally walking out?
We have 780 union members, and 12 went back to work.
Mm-hmm. And they may be under the gun from something else, or financially, or what?
Financially, I know that two of them were offered management positions, and once they got in there, they were told to run their machines. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're no longer union members, and they'll pay their consequences when the time comes.
Uh-huh. And a little earlier, you mentioned you prepared for the strike. Can you tell listeners how it was that you prepared for the strike?
I personally, 2 years ago, had open heart surgery and was off for 10 months and basically learned to live with not a whole lot of money. And that came back, and
you learned to be frugal.
I paid a lot of things off. I got a very small house payment, motorcycle payment, and my utility bills. I have no car payments, no nothing. I paid everything off in advance. I paid my house for a year, I'm good till March, and that, knowing what was going to happen after what we've seen, what the contract was that the UAW accepted last year. So just put some money aside and
hunkered
ready
down.
To live.
You're hunkered down?
Hunkered down, peanut butter and jelly all the way.
Has anybody planted some community victory gardens for you guys in case you have to be here through the fall?
We have a food bank down at the Union Hall that anybody can go and drop off food. And it's doing all right. It's not doing as good as we hope, but we have had a lot of large donations from some local companies. I think they reported today at our meeting was like over $16,000, and then our union threw in $20,000 for the strike fund.
Those are contributions to
The strike fund.
And that strike fund pays the striking workers a stipend each month?
No, our international pays us weekly.
A weekly?
And
do you mind if I ask how much?
It's $150 a week. Uh-huh. But they're willing to help us any way they can. From the international level, our local put in 20 into the strike fund, and that's helping with, you know, our hall. We can get that food bank going better, and that, because as long as we can help the younger guys, you know, to where their families aren't struggling, and we could, if it's food, whatever they need, you know, we're willing to help them. You know, because some of us are a little better off than they are. You know, this guy out here yesterday hired in March. So he was only here 2 months. And he was already, but he's standing out here with us. You know, so we got to make sure those people are all right, you know, and can make it and weather through this.
If people wanted to contribute to the food pantry or the strike fund, where would they bring the food or send their contribution?
It would go to the IAM Local 851. It's in Shanahan, Illinois. And if they want to drop it off, it's in the Martin Whalen building on the frontage road right off of Route 6 and 55.
Okay. Thanks very much. Got any more thoughts about the nature, the historical nature of this struggle? I mean, it's been going on since they walked down Michigan Avenue demonstrating for the 8-hour day and the right to be treated like human beings. And, you know, 1870s.
Yeah. It's a lot different now, but it's for the same thing. You know, the 8-hour day, you know, they want to force all the overtime, Saturdays, you know, and then they want to go to alternative work schedules, you know, and it's time for people's, you know.
From your perspective as somebody who's worked here in production for a long time, is there any purpose to their forcing those kind of schedules except to be punitive, to sort of make sure you understand who's the master and who's the slave?
That's basically what it is. But it's to cut a lot of people out of here.
To force a turnover? They don't
care about us. Mm-hmm. They never did, and they never will. As much as they want to say, oh, Caterpillar's a big happy family and all this, and they're all for us and that, they're not. I mean, I've been through a lot of issues in that plant.
Safety issues?
Oh, we don't want to go there. We really don't want to go there.
Well, I might want to go there, but maybe you don't want to go there.
No, I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
Like I said, I just had that open heart surgery and had a lot of issues with what I breathe in there every day. And almost wouldn't be able to be here to talk to you today. Spent a long time in the hospital, and I'm here now.
Well, I'm glad you're here now, and I'm not offering somebody condolences. And looks like you've got a great day. I'm sure, not every day is as nice as this one, I'm sure.
We're hoping for the hot weather. The hotter it gets out here, the hotter it is in there. And
oh, it's brutal in there?
Oh, it's brutal in there in the summertime. It gets 120, 130 degrees in there. And the last, when we moved into this building, they didn't want us to have fans in the shop.
No kidding.
No, you don't need no fans in the shop.
I bet they got fans and air conditioning in the management's office.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
The air conditioning went out when I was a chief steward at the time, and I was arguing about the fans, about getting fans over here, and the air conditioning went out in the office. They sent them all home. It got too hot in there. Can't expect people to work like that.
So I guess that tells you what they think about you.
Basically, I won. We got fans in there now. But
is it just an issue of catering to the employees? Do the fans upset the machinery? Cause parts to be out of tolerance or what?
No, they basically it was about contamination. But see, our wash tanks are set up right outside the clean room. And right from the wash tank goes right into the assembly room. So it's after we machine them and everything, the parts are washed and that.
And then they're in a special clean room for assembly.
And then they go in a special clean room, which is air conditioned.
Yeah, sure.
For assembly.
Well, you said you had 50 millionths tolerance?
Yeah, 50 millionths of an inch.
Yeah.
About a half a micron.
So a piece of dust.
Yep.
Is going to muck that up.
Piece of dust is, if you can see it, it's too much.
Okay. Well, that was kind of rough in there.
Hey, Skip!
It's going to get hotter than that!
Hey,
Skip! Hey! Get you some sleep tonight! It's going to be rough!
Hey, Skip!
110 degrees, it gets hot!
Skip.
Hey, hey! Hey, hey!
Yes, we're
holding
the
bus,
not for you!
Yes!
Hey, Skip, go!
Look out now!
Okay.
Hey!
She's from A&E.
What's going on?
And I'm up from Dalton at the glass company up there. About 700 of us in the glass factory. We're watching this really close. We got good support.
Okay, clear.
Yeah.
I saw your head out the window, Skip.
Hi, you have any comments on this?
My name's Laura. I work at Electromotive Diesel. I'm in UAW 718, and Caterpillar owns Electromotive Diesel now. Our union supports this strike. I support it. This is an important example of workers standing up and not taking cuts and attacks on the conditions on the job. It's not just about money, from what I can tell. They're saying now they're treated on the job, the question of safety. So people got to come out and support the strike. They need money. They need food. Bring it to your union. Bring it to your church. there's other strikes going on too. More people are getting, are taking a stand, and we need more examples like this.
Strikes against Caterpillar or other plants?
No, Lockheed's on strike. It's IAM organized in Connecticut. The UIC professionals walked out this morning. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, they're on strike for the first time in the history of Chicago. Coca-Cola on strike. Coca-Cola workers. All different.
This is all overdue.
Yeah, but you've seen 20 lockouts in the last year. Worker could put, the bosses create their own grave diggers. They push people to a certain point, you know. I'm running for Congress for the Socialist Workers Party, and, we fight for things like strengthen the unions, jobs for all, things that unify our class, fight police brutality, U.S. and other imperialist troops out of Afghanistan and Pakistan, and so those kind of things.
Okay, and Electromotive, didn't that used to be up in Canada?
Yeah, they, in London, Ontario, they locked the workers out there in January, and then they shut the plant down and moved production to Muncie, Indiana, to a non-union plant. So the LaGrange Caterpillar plant fed that plant, so it was, we made the industrial powers and fed them up there. But so that was a big attack on all workers' rights, but especially Canada hasn't been raped like the U.S. working class has. They know that, too. But it's hitting them now. Yeah.
What's your sense of the bigger picture? Why?
Well, they're working class who've won better off wages. That's what they are. And they... the boss's tactics are bold with the lockouts. They've been confident because there has been no leadership that's led a fight to protest it. So they've felt they can just lock out workers and get away. You know, they'll shove it down the workers' throats, the conditions and the cuts and wages. Yeah, but all of history shows workers, start to look to each other, try to figure out how can we change our conditions. And many draw on history and have family that have been part of history of union struggles, and others who haven't, they're going to go through some things like other workers have and figure out who their enemy is and ally is in real life, and they're going to build a new leadership through those struggles. That's how it's always happened, and it will continue. So it's the bosses are more confident because there hasn't been a lot of resistance, but they're going to start to see more resistance, and we're going to build a leadership through that struggle. We point to things like I help write and contribute to the militant newspaper that, tries to build solidarity with fights going on to help have victories, but also drawing lessons from the struggles whether you lose or win. So,
is it strictly coming out of corporate America, the financial institutions, or is government somehow, which seems to be the ally of finance and manufacturing?
Well, this is how capitalism works. The people who sit on...
I've never seen a cop bust the head of a boardroom member.
Right. Well, first of all, the people who sit on the bank committees of banks at J.P. Morgan and Bank of America are owners of capital, like Caterpillar and other big companies. That's who sits on the banks committees to decide what they do with the money, who they give loans to. So... that's the laws of capitalism. It's the bankers aren't the problem. This one institution over here is not the problem. It's how the system works. And they have a crisis. They're not making the same profits they used to out of our blood and sweat. They can't do it because they're all over the world now in every single corner. They've kind of exhausted that. They have overproduction. They don't produce things we need. They just try to make a quick buck on fictitious capital. You'll see the bets in the stock market on where they're going to make money. It's not off of things that we're producing in new factories. It has nothing to do with that. And it only buys so much time until another bubble pops, right? And you're going to see deeper depression. It's already world depression. It's just there might be some ups and downs in the business cycle. Buy a little time off, do a few things. But this thing, I don't see it getting better anytime soon. It looks like this is going to be a long-term thing. Depression. It's not a recession, it's a depression. So
this is global class struggle?
This is capitalism working, and this is the working class, as Karl Marx said, the more and more unification, broadening of the working class is what needs to happen, and it will happen. People start to see themselves as part of the world. When you had the uprisings in the Middle East, you saw in Madison, Wisconsin, people having signs, walk like an Egyptian. The world's getting smaller. Workers starting to see themselves as a class. It's going to be harder to divide us. This is the gravediggers of capitalism. This is what capitalism created. You know, capitalism was progressive at one time after feudalism, but it's an economic system that's reached its height. It won't just fall over, but it's reached its limits and what it can offer humanity. So, but thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm glad to be here on the picket line. My biggest problem is with the scabs thinking that they had to cross because they had a personal issue. Let me tell you, I got a boyfriend that was diagnosed with cancer at the beginning of March. He made $1,800 to $200 a week. He's now not making anything. I am here on strike supporting my brothers and sisters. He gave me balls for a Christmas gift, metal balls, so that I could stand up for what is right for me. We now have no income coming in between the two of us. Now the insurance is saying it was a pre-existing condition. So we now get even lowered. He's been in intensive care for 4 weeks, going on five, and I'm not crossing. Those f***ing scabs that cross, they got no balls. I got balls.
What did you do in the plant?
I was a assembly and test.
And how long have you been working for Caterpillar?
17 years.
And what are your thoughts about the contract they offered you that you rejected the first time?
That they just want to break the union, people, and destroy the middle class. Now, I want my grandkids to have a decent middle class income. That's all I want.
And many of the older workers, they're making the full union scale. It's the younger workers that make...
I pull union scale, but I don't want those people underneath me to make non-union scale. They did that to us. I don't want it done to anyone else.
So this is a moral issue?
It's more than unethical. It's a sin.
Okay. Care to say your name?
Linda. Linda Raisler.
Any comments about the strike? You're holding a sign that says Machinist Union District Number 8, AFL-CIO on strike. How long have you been out here?
Just a month. We're basically out here because they're trying to make an example out of this union, just to bring the contract language and stuff. Much takeaways, much less for the next time anybody's contract comes up. After we've worked very, very hard in here for them, and they don't appreciate it, you know.
What do you do in the plant?
I'm an inspector for control valve assembly. So
that's pretty precision work.
Oh yeah, very precision work.
I'm gonna try and shade your.
Basically, anything that goes wrong with the valves on the test stand, then I figure out what the problem is. So they don't appreciate that, you know. They're
so. Let me explore the nature of your work a little bit. It's more than does it work or doesn't it work,
right,
and throw it away.
No.
Can you talk about the skills that are involved in what you do and how long it took you to develop those skills and how you went about that?
Well, it's more of measuring, knowing what to measure. These things are very, very tight tolerances. I was fortunate enough to get to pass the test and be trained in the tool room. So that's a tool and die apprenticeship. It's a 4-year apprenticeship. And I was in the tool room for 3 years when I got laid off after I graduated. And they brought me back as an inspector. So I've machined very tight tolerances. And now I'm measuring very tight tolerances. And so...
But it's more than just measuring, as... I believe I heard you say you have to know what to look for based on the performance,
right,
or lack of performance of,
right,
the part.
Right. So a lot of times you get a general idea from when that problem came up before. Or otherwise, if I don't know, I get the engineers involved. They give me an idea where to look. Basically, I check out the valve bodies and see if I can find anything wrong with them. If there's nothing wrong with that, then I go on to the next component and look for something wrong with that. You know, and if we don't find anything wrong, then it's possibly the test stand is wrong. Or possibly maybe it's a change in engineering or something, you know, that was a problem we never caught before, but it was a, you know, an engineering problem at times. There's all kinds of variables with this stuff. So.
And these valve bodies are the size of my fist or the size of...
Oh, they vary in size. Some are the size of your fist. Some are 200 pounds. You know, some are big. It just varies depending on what its job is to do on the tractor.
Okay.
Or whatever, you know, whatever machine it's going in.
And how did you prepare for this strike?
Well, I was really taken by surprise by this strike. You know, I just have savings. I don't spend a lot of money. So that's just my nature, you know, how I do it. So, but I'm not real happy about it either way. It's just more of realizing that the company was preparing for this all along. That's why they gave us this contract, taking stuff away from us. They're trying to make an example of this union. That's what they're trying to do.
And have you seen amongst your union brothers and sisters solidarity?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are you planting victory gardens?
Yeah, we're just trying to hang in there and support each other. So.
And what kind of, you know, what form might the support take? Are families helping families?
Well, they've can't come up with stuff for us to get, like medicine. A lot of people are on medication. You know, they've come up with a card for that to get reduced rates. I think they've got a food pantry going. It's still pretty early. You know, I don't
just
think
a
anybody's
month on the picket line.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really hurting yet. So.
How you doing?
Good.
Sean Galloway.
You want to give a comment or two about this strike? I can say your name.
Sean Galloway.
Okay.
I would say that we're holding together strong right now. I don't see any change in that. The ultimate outcome of this is going to be we're going to win because we got to support the community. We got to support each other. And what they're trying to do here is just trying to kill the middle class. There's nothing simpler here than union busting going on. Nothing simpler. It has nothing to do with economics. It's about busting up the union.
It's a class issue?
You bet it's a class issue. This is absolutely nationwide. This is epidemic on what's going on in this country and what they're trying to do to the middle class. And finally, people are standing up to do something about it. Hopefully it continues. I know speaking for myself and all my brothers and sisters out here, this will continue.
Do you work in the plant?
Yes, I do.
And what do you do there?
I'm a material specialist in logistics.
And that means you track down the...
I do work order manipulation. That's the term I give it now.
Uh-huh.
Routing issues and materials, just overall material handling. Doing the parts ordering, the delivery, record accuracy, which I hate to say right now with the people that are doing it, is going to be a wreck when I get back. Absolutely. It'll be a wreck when I get back.
It makes the difference if they're building things with the wrong materials and parts, doesn't it?
It doesn't matter what they're building when it's not coming out of there a good product. And America and our customers demand a good product. They're not going to get that with what they got in there right now.
How long have you worked?
I've worked here for 17 years, sir.
17 years. And you've been a union member all that time?
Yes, I have.
And what's the role of unions in building the middle class?
The role of unions in building the middle class? That's simple. If you take away the middle class and the unions, no one has disposable income. What does that do to the business around the area? Who spends the money in the area?
Those are the real job creators,
yes,
the people with paycheck.
Absolutely it is. I mean, if you diminish the union, you diminish your community. And I will not be a corporate slave. You know, right now what they want in there is nothing but an indentured servitude, is what they expect from you. Won't have it.
Okay.
And neither will my brother and sisters.
People don't want to have concessionary bargaining. They want to at least keep what they got because of the profitability of the company. They feel they should be treated the same way our CEOs are treated, and they should share in the good times. I'm a 36-and-a-half-year member. I've made enormous concessions throughout my life when the times were tough. Now times are great, and they still want concessions. It's
great for the company.
Yeah, they made $1.58 billion first quarter this year. They made over $14 billion profit last year. And those profits are based on, you know, record years, the years previous. So at some point in time, you have to start treating people like human beings and not take away their seniority and all this other stuff.